What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic or you are listening to us wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate it. We couldn't do the show without the help of our sponsors. Delete Me, the tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all sorts of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like your name, address, age, phone number, email address, even photos of your home, out of the leading data broker websites. And removing these personal, this sorts of personal information from these data broker sites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. So Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, CNET, and they have successfully removed over 20 million personal listings from the internet. Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available. Check them out by using the link in the description to see how they can help you take back your personal information. And we are also brought to you by Fiverr. If you want to outsource some of this work or just need help specializing on a certain project that you're working on, you've got to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. If you need somebody to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign, you can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set. So click the link in the description box and put this army of freelancers to work for you. Well, now that we've got the business out of the way, I want to get down to the important stuff, and that is talking about the education system of the United States, where we've been, where we're going, and maybe how we can view this this whole situation a little bit differently. Now, for the last 2 years, I've been one of the many speakers at Anarchapulco, and I've had a pleasure of you know, I do my speech early, and then I get a couple days to just go around and go from place to place and watch other people speak. And so this is where I had a chance to meet David Rodriguez, who was talking about unschooling, and this was the most important, it was the most fascinating component of Anarchapulco for me. I think a lot of people get caught up in the anarchist component and cryptocurrency, but really, if we're going to be honest about this, the most important investment is not cryptocurrency, it's the education of our children for the future generations. And when I saw what David was doing there, it blew my mind. So I had to have him on. So David, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. And let's get, actually, before we get into, before we get into the schooling, I'd like to hear a little bit about your recent experience with Un-American Airlines and what they've done to you with regards to the mask situation.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a great conversation. I love talking about schooling and children and the future generations for freedom. At American Airlines, I decided to do something called Operation Medical Exemption because I had, with my friends, my freedom friends out here in Santa Cruz in California, we did something called Operation Grocery Store. We went in the grocery stores without masks in groups and recorded that. So traveling, I'm by myself, but I wanted to see if they would respect the medical exemption. And so I went on to American Airlines. The first time, first flight, they respected it, and we got on, no big deal. And then at the very end of the encounter, she said, you know, you can't video record me, the staff on the plane. I was like, okay, so just kind of clarifying what the rules are, what the policies. Okay, I turned it off. On my next connecting flight, I went through the gate and was about to go on the plane. And there was a lady there standing, like, kind of, you know, elbows out and saying, you know, you can't record on here. And she said she referred to the previous connecting flight. And I was like, oh, okay, well, and if that's the case, then I didn't even go live yet, so I won't go live, and I'd like to get on the plane and get out of here. And I don't know if she was having a power trip or some type of ego thing, but anyways, she started using aggression against me and saying, you know, come out of the jetway, because I was in the jetway. And by the way, this is all on video on my Facebook page. And so I was like, I recorded because I wanted to get this on video and say, can I record in the jetway? I must have asked her five times. She ignored the question, and they took the boarding pass out of my hand, and then they walked me out of the jetway. And I was just being peaceful and compliant. I didn't want to cause a scene. And then all of a sudden, she's like, you go sit down with that guy over there and discuss. I said, well, the plane's leaving right now. I'd like to just be on my way. And I get asking her, why are you kicking me off the plane? And we had multiple videos. She never answered it. So very suspicious, and I ended up missing my flight. And thankfully, because a lot of freedom supporters are out there, they donated $5, $10. A few people donated like $100. And I was able to get my ticket back and basically break even. But I think there is a market for freedom, and this mask thing is not going away until we make it go away. As an attendee at Acapulco, you know, the government has no authority. They just have coercion and force. And so when they use it on peaceful people, that makes them and the agents of their government, of their organization, criminals. And so, you know, I have family members who are teachers and principals and military people. So I know there's good loving people in the system, but the fundamental, you know, problem is that's based on coercion. It's funded by taxation, which is robbery, which is theft, which is extortion. And so that's what happened. And I came back the next day, and you know, some of the videos went kind of viral and started a conversation. You know, I think we have to have this conversation. We are going to talk about that today, about putting these masks and social distancing in schools. This is the greatest concern because it's now affecting innocent, vulnerable children, their minds, their subconscious minds. And I find that unacceptable. So just like you, you know, we're going to keep talking about it and getting the word out there, because we have to make a positive change with our lives, in my opinion. And the children shouldn't be suffering. It should be these criminals who are actually causing harm who need to be responsible for their actions. And we got to hold them accountable.
I totally agree. And I love this. I love this is, you know, this is just peaceful, you know, disagreement with authority, just, you know, exercising your right. And I've, you know, you and I have interacted with each other before. You're not a jerky guy. You're not somebody that's, you know, you're a decent human being. You ask the questions, you present yourself in a reasonable manner. You're not throwing yourself down on the jetway. You're not acting like a maniac or anything like that. It's interesting though, that they just refuse to give you an answer. I mean, maybe it occurred to them that, you know, maybe my authority is enough. How dare you even, I don't even have to give you an answer for your question. Well, hang on a second. This isn't, you know, us having a disagreement in the parking lot somewhere. I'm a paying customer who probably has my luggage on that flight that you're telling me I can't get on that I have already paid for. So, you know, this is a huge problem. And like you said, it's not going away. And, you know, it's funny that would actually lead us into talking about schooling, because these two things theoretically should have nothing to do with one another. But the fact that we're talking about mask compliance for getting on an airplane, we'll see that, of course, moving forward into mask compliance to going to a school and for kids. And like you said, what is the psychological impact of that? let's back up to the 100 years ago before the mask, but something that was even more devious, and it was the creation of this compulsory schooling system that sounds like a good idea when you talk about it in generalities, like, hey, we're going to educate kids and we're going to, you know, make them smarter so that they can function in society. And I guess on the surface that sounds like a good idea. However, when I was writing my book, The Octopus of Global Control, I had to dig into the history of schooling. And what I found that was surprising to me was the overt influence of like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation, that they were laying out classrooms in a way that mimicked the insides of factories, like straight lines and a bell ringing when the class was over and then a bell ringing when the day was over, to sort of precondition these kids to get them more accepting of, say, life working in a factory forever, you know, for the next 30 or 40 years. So how did this schooling, the compulsory schooling, start in the United States, and where are we now?
Yeah, so it started in 1852 in Boston, Massachusetts, with a guy named Horace Mann, and it took him 10 years to actually lobby for this mandatory compulsory school law, but he got it from the Prussians, which is, you know, previous Germany, and their purpose was to make obedient soldiers and obedient consumers and, of course, workers, clerks, people that don't have critical thinking skills, because they found out that if people can think for themselves, they won't obey and they become very insubordinate. And so it's all about management, you know, from the top down. And there was a very interesting situation from 1806, where there was a battle of Jena, that's J-E-N-A, and the Prussians lost to Napoleon. And so all the leaders and the philosophers got together and they said, man, we lost this battle. Like, why? And they said, we're commanding the soldiers to march into the bullets and they're going left and right. You know, they're self-preservation. So they said, we got to create a school system that takes away the free will. And here's actually a quote from that conversation from Johann Fichte. This is one of the most diabolical quotes that start the system, because there's been previous attempts to make compulsory school, but this was kind of the real progenitor and the creation, the catalyst. He says this, quote, education should aim at destroying free will, so that after pupils are thus schooled, they will be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. When the technique has been perfected, every government that has been in charge of education for more than one generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the needs of armies or policemen. So this is 1806, and then 1819, Prussia got the mandatory compulsory laws passed in their country. And, you know, because the people want to control other people, you know, the aristocrats and the, you know, the globalists. And I should even say before that is the kings and the monarchs. You know, before the Constitutional Republic, there was a monarchy and, like, you know, the divine right of kings. And why do I get to rule you? Because God made me the king. That's why I get to rule you. And so they evolved to a constitutional republic. And this is why I'm so hopeful in the future for a voluntary world. I think voluntarism or anarchism is the next evolution, individual, personal sovereignty, accountability. So it started then, and then 1852. And over the next 60 years, each state then passed their own mandatory attendance policies. And so everyone listening and watching, you should understand that the crutch and the weak point, the Achilles heel of the whole system, is the state mandates you to put your child in these buildings. I don't know where you're living or listening, but in California, your child is called a truant if they miss up to 3 days or 8 days or whatever the various educational code is. But if you become a truant, they can fine the parents up to $2,000 and they can jail the parents for a year, according to the California educational code. Now you ask, well, where did they get the authority to do that? They invented it. They made it up. They don't have the authority. Why? Because you have unalienable rights to your life, liberty, and property. They know this over 200 years ago. So this is why we have to rewind and remember really who we are as humans on the earth, and why your sacred divine being, especially your child, is in that same preciousness. And so that's why schools are super diabolical, in my opinion, and unacceptable. And I have so much respect and appreciation for John Taylor Gatto, for exposing this, you know, decades ago, and basically investing his life to empower young people, teenagers, and speak truth to parents, to children, so they can chart their own way in life. And as you're starting to see, people are starting to push back, but they think it's a curriculum problem. They think it's a teacher pay problem. But the ultimate truth, in my opinion, is that it's a compulsory problem. It's a coercion problem. And as Gatto taught us, if you make attendance voluntary at school, you will see a completely new system 5 years and a drastically transformed system in 10 years.
Wow. Yeah, I was unaware of John Taylor Gatto's work until I started the research on the Octopus book. I found him. I started watching, I was listening to old lectures of his. What a fascinating guy. He kind of reminded me of a little bit like Ron Paul. You know, he was an older gentleman by the time I was listening to him. He was, you know, talking and making sense about some logical ways of looking at the world and talking about education. And it kind of threw me for a loop because it had occurred to me that I'd never really examined our education system. I really didn't give it any sort of the attention that it deserved. I went through it and came out, and I am from California, went through, you know, school in California, high school, college, and all of that. And it never really, I never had the, I never dug deep enough to even think about how did it all start. I just kind of assumed it was always there, to be honest with you, that schooling had always been there. And when you first hear compulsory schooling, you think, you know, the average person's going, well, what's wrong with that? I got to take my, you know, first of all, I got to go to work. So it's great because it's a built-in babysitter for the kids. But they're going to teach them how to read, and they're going to teach them how to write, and they're going to teach them arithmetic, and they're going to need these things as they go out into the world. And I don't know how to do all this stuff, and I'm going to work. And so, you know, so I can understand where parents can justify this, you know, can maybe not give it much thought and justify it in a sense that, you know, that any, you know, whatever the school's there to help us, we'll take what we can get from them. It'll prepare them for, maybe it's not going to make everybody a brain surgeon, but I'll get my kids smart enough and maybe send them off to college, you know. But one of the things that when I realized that the public school system was totally broken, and just a personal example of it, was when I was living in Las Vegas. I had a friend who was a second grade teacher at a public school that was on the east side of town, more socioeconomically depressed area. And she had a one of those days where the kids are out of school because it's parent teacher conferences, and then you have conferences scheduled every 30 minutes with the parents from 8 o'clock in the morning all the way till I think 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, just for those parents that, you know, had to come after work or whatever. She had 27 or 8 kids in her second grade class. One parent showed up. One parent showed up for the teacher parent conference. And her feeling was, you know, if you don't care about your kids' education, why should I? And I thought, I can't really blame you for that. I mean, it is so, you know, it's, and I understand there's a lot of things at play here. You know, you get parents that are working two jobs, multiple, I get all that. But it just showed that, like, oh my goodness, like, parents have checked, you know, in some cases parents have checked out by the second grade, you know, that their kids are in school. So it didn't seem like it was a sustainable sort of way of conducting school when you have a bunch of parents that no longer care about this. So who was John Taylor Gatto, and how did he figure this out? Cause I'll tell you, he just had an easy way of explaining things. I encourage people to just go on YouTube and type in his name, and listen to some of his speeches, because it got a hold of me. I wound up quoting him in my book about 4 or 5 different times. He's an amazing guy. How did you come to understand him and follow his work?
So there's an epic 5-hour interview called The Ultimate History Lesson, produced by TragedyandHope.com. The team did a great job. That was, I think, 2011. And they go over his entire career. And so his background, he was a business guy. He was an advertising guy, and you know, that's where he was going to go make a lot of money. And during this his transition out of the advertising business, he was looking for a new job. He had a buddy who was a partner, like a roommate, and said, "Hey, I'm going to quit being a teacher." And he said, "Let me use your license," because back then there was no pictures on the license. So he just took the license and became a teacher. And he tells his stories of his first day, you know, being a teacher and trying to help the student and getting pushback from a principal as a substitute teacher, and then getting transferred to a new school and getting pushback from a principal for trying to help the students. And he said, "What is going on here?" You know, and so that sparked his own curiosity. And as we became friends and business partners, I started to ask him, I even have it on video, you know, before his final days. And it was like, "Why did you research this, John?" And he said, "I had to answer my own questions for myself. What was going on in these schools?" And it appeared that somebody had designed the schools to prevent actual learning from happening. Oh. And this includes, you know, bells every 30 to 50 minutes when concentration is one of the most important things you can allow your child to develop. And this is why video games aren't really problematic. This is why you know, strange hobbies aren't problematic if you know, okay, they're 10 years old or this age and they're really focused on this game or whatever. Well, later on, they can transfer that to a career. They can transfer that to any passion that they have if they're allowed to develop that. So he taught for 30 years in New York City, and he got the State Teacher of the Year award twice. And it was really interesting because he used that platform. This is a very prestigious award, right? Over 50,000 teachers in the state of New York. So he used that platform to go out and tell the world what's really going on in school. And so, you know, the last 10 years of his career, he started getting really curious and digging into the history of the school system. You mentioned the Rockefeller Foundation and Carnegie Foundation. And he's a very compassionate guy. And he's like, they're not necessarily evil, but it's a rational, logical thing. If you have thousands of employees and hundreds of locations, you don't want problems. So you want to make them non-thinking. You logically want to remove that from. Now, it is an immoral system, but he was able to see the other side of the coin that they're just making logical business moves. Now, this is also to omit that they didn't have a moral code. You know, it was like money was their god. Profit was their, you know, their highest aim. And for people like you and me, maybe some of your listeners, freedom is the highest aim. And as much as we want to become wealthy and have a great lifestyle, that's not what really fulfills people. You know, in my opinion, it's creating a life that you love, you know, making a lifestyle, having good relationships, being healthy, maybe having a family or having pets or having something that you get excited about. And if you're not free to explore that, as we're not from age 6 to age 18, then by the time you're 18 or 19, everybody's like, "Hey, time to get to work, choose a career, go to college." And you're like, "What do you mean? Like, I don't know what to do." And so Gatto was very instructive in saying there's about 50 experiences you have as a child that direct your life and kind of future interests and passions. And so that's why he says experience, exploration, and adventure are more important than algebra. And that's kind of a funny dig at, like, you know, algebra that we're forced to do when rarely any of us use algebra in our adult life. But we're spend so many hours doing homework, doing tests, thinking that's important, but that's not really the case. So I came across that Ultimate History Lesson and also some other videos before that. But it was a really well-made film. And I reached out to him and I said, "Hey, man, I want to help you get your name out there because I wish everybody knew about what you're talking about right now." And as I mentioned before, my mother is a retired school teacher. I have family members who are principals and teachers now. But if you look into the history of it, then you say, well, why is it compulsory? What's going on there? And I just wanted to help promote his name. So I reached out and him and his wife asked me to help out with some of the projects they're working on. So I did. And, you know, now I'm just trying to work on something called the Gatto Project, which I'm really excited about. It's not officially launched yet, but the Gatto Project is an acronym, which means get all the thinkers out, Gatto, of forced schools. And that can mean you can homeschool, you can unschool, you can do democratic schooling, you can do apprenticeshipping, internshipping, agile learning centers, self-directed teen centers. There's so many things you can do, but there's no hope in reforming the system. It's a $700 billion a year system, and there's 50 million children in it in the U.S., 600 million children worldwide are in a compulsory learning environment, and it just ruins learning. And once I understood that, and I felt it, I did feel it, but I couldn't articulate it. And maybe for you and some of your listeners, it's like, oh, I knew something was wrong. Why do I have to raise my hand to go to the bathroom or go get a drink of water? Like, this is completely harmful and demoralizing for humans, because you'll never need to do that again in your life. This is basically teaching you to be an obedient person. And then they put in the statism as well. You pledge allegiance to the flag, to the republic for which it stands. But shouldn't you be like pledging to truth, to honesty, to sincerity, to love, to peace, to your family values, your personal values, your traditions, your heritage? There's so many things better than the republic to pledge your allegiance to. So he dug into it. He wrote the book, Dumbing Us Down, and little by little people started to catch on. And hopefully now through the internet, you know, we can really expose his life's work. I did publish the first volume of the Underground History of American Education. We're going to produce two more volumes for a total of three. And then the dream is to turn it into a film. So I got, my hands full for the next few years, but it's for a good cause. And as you mentioned about the children, if we love freedom and we want to live in a voluntary, peaceful, free world, and we're not focusing on teaching this to children, demonstrating it to young people, I think we're being deceived by ourselves. So it's a difficult conversation, because my parents love me. I'm sure your parents love you, the people out there, but they went to the public school as well. And their parents went to the public school. So, you know, like you assume this is a normal part of life. This is just the way it is. And then you find out that it was a very slow adoption rate, you know, from the 1850s into the 60s, 70s. The early 1900s, it wasn't like this great, hey, let's everybody get on board. It was the state forcing it through politicians using children as tokens or as chips in poker. And of course, who doesn't want happy, healthy children? And that really was what was used for political benefit, military benefit, huge corporate benefits. And now it's falling apart. And I'm really hopeful and grateful that we're having many conversations like this about homeschooling, Common Core, and some of these other solutions, because I think it will fall apart hopefully in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's funny because the Rockefeller and Carnegie, where they started things, and you figure, well, it's been 100 years or so, they're out of the picture. But here comes the new industrialist, Bill Gates. Right. Yeah. And he has there's a funny thing that happens when you've got more money than you can ever spend in your lifetime. You start wanting to buy things that aren't for sale. And the school system seems to be low hanging fruit for these industrialist maniacs that say, well, I want to shape society into the way that I want it. You know, now maybe 100 years ago, it was for the assembly line and the factory workers. But then when Bill Gates gets involved and his ties to technology that we all know about, and unfortunately some of his other ties to some of the more nefarious things in the vaccination world that go unreported, you know, this might be the wrong guy to allow to step in and be in control of some of the textbooks with Common Core. Talk to us a little bit about Common Core and where that came from and where that's going and what that looks like to people moving forward.
Yeah, so Common Core is actually the first attempt at a national curriculum for math and language. And so in the past, the districts would get money from the state and the state would administer the curriculum. So you have the district and the state. And now the states are getting money from the federal Department of Education. So now, instead of being a state-led curriculum, which is still terrible, now it's a national curriculum. So it's centralizing. And so they want to create the same type of beliefs and values, attitudes in children, because these children raise up and become the voting citizens and the populace. So this is why decentralization is so important. And Bill Gates openly said, I think it's been maybe 3 or 4 years since he said it, but he said Common Core, we made some mistakes. And, he kind of was drawing back from his position 10 years ago, where Common Core was the greatest thing, you know, since running water or something, you know, because they have to sell it to the populists, who the politicians can sell it. And then once you see what's going on in the Common Core, I mean, they're teaching sex ed to 10-year-olds and, you know, doing teaching about really, you know, gross things that I think parents should focus on. I mean, the other side of the coin is if schools were really about education, they would focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's it. Stop forcing your political agenda and your globalist agenda. That's really what it's about. You know, the United Nations and their Agenda 21, they do want, it's called a global citizen. So now you got to start thinking globally, when in reality, you look around you at your family, your neighbors, your community, everything's being kind of neglected in the name of the greater good, which kind of ties into the mask thing and COVID-19 and who knows what's coming with these, I think vaccines will be coming for this thing, and then putting it into the schools. So, and even the Common Core math, I mean, some of the stuff is really just hilarious and sad and enraging, looking at the Common Core math, they're changing it up. And so what they want to do is confuse the mind of the child, you know, for 12 years out of your supervision, out of your approval. You have no control what's going on in the curriculum. It's going into the mind of your child, and then confuse them and then tell them whatever they want. They say, okay, my mom and dad dropped me off at school. It must be okay. They approve. So if they're telling me I should be a global citizen and pay a carbon tax to, you know, prevent climate change or go on climate change strikes or social distance and wear masks, my parents drop me here. My parents know where I'm at. This must be approved. And then the kids take the homework back to the parents and say, what's this? And mom would say, I don't know what that is. You know, right. Just do it. Because, you know, they can't imagine that the schools would be harming children. And that's really where we're at now. You know, and this is why I love John Gatto, because he calls it a prison. And I call it day prison. And it is child abuse. And it is traumatic and causes really, really bad feelings. And I would say in about 80% of children. And I find about 20% of people who leave the public school actually had a positive experience. So I can't say it's bad for everyone. You know, that's just something you have to decide for yourself on an own individual basis. But my experience is that the majority of people didn't like it, didn't get much value. And the only reason I stayed in there because of the sports. So I think there will be a future market for youth sports outside of school, kind of like maybe youth baseball or these kind of things, but they tied them together. Very strategic. I mean, these guys are very sophisticated, you know? So if you want to play soccer or, you know, basketball, then you have to join the school team. But I would invite some of the adults and visionary parents out there to start your own leagues. Even if you have two teams or three teams and eight kids or whatever, stop putting them in the status model, because they're going to learn statism. And if we believe in a voluntary world, we got to teach them voluntary principles, self-ownership, the non-aggression principle. That's two great principles to start with. And if you really want to get risky, you can put the self-defense principle in there. I mean, those are three fundamental steps. If I would have been taught that at age 10 or 12 or 14, I would have been fully ready. So I think kids are brilliant. You know, Buckminster Fuller said every child's a born genius. The challenge is that they get de-genius trying to please their teachers and please their parents. So believe in the ability of your child, and they are naive and inexperienced, but they have energy. They have an open mind. They are curious. They want to know how the world works. And as adults, we don't have all the answers. We hardly have any answers. There's so many mysteries of life, but we have some things to give them. But if when we force it on them with a good heart and a good mind, it's anti-educational. If we allow and kind of facilitate, and this is what I do in my homeschool consulting, is I help parents realize you're not really the teacher. You're more of a guide, a facilitator, a coach, and you are a modeler, you know? So you are kind of a teacher in that way, but you don't have to know all seven subjects, math, science, language, arts, you know, PE, dance, music. You know, you can use the internet now. You can use libraries. You can use your neighbors and previous people in your relationship, in your life. But think about you as a facilitator. You're a learning partner with your child, and be curious with them, help them. And if you find something they're curious about and it's dinosaurs or it's video games or it's flowers, as boring as that might be to you, to them it's not. To them it's new. This is their first time on Earth. And so you want to kind of guide them and maybe recommend some books or some magazines or some type of path that's interesting for them. And as I mentioned before about concentration, they can change later, but they want to look at you as a trusted partner, a loving partner in learning and their life. And then they'll always come to you for advice.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. The parents have inadvertently become co-conspirators in this with handing their kids over to the state. And I think it's important when people talk about public schools, I like to rename them government schools just for a little bit of emphasis, because that's what this is. It is a government school. They're teaching you government issued subjects in a particular way. If you don't regurgitate the information in the correct manner, you get marked wrong. If you don't regurgitate the version of history that they teach you, which we all know is totally wrong. I mean, history is written by the victors, but also then the schools and the governments get involved and start tweaking things. My God, I feel like I learned history going through school. I had to unlearn everything I learned and then learn a new version of history once I got out of school. It's very frustrating, but you know, and parents don't consider themselves to be co-conspirators in this. They think they're just doing what they're supposed to do. Hell, it's compulsory. They have to do it. They have to get their kid in school somehow. Maybe someone pays a little bit more for private school than someone else. But now what we've gone through, we've experienced this, halfway through 2020. We've seen the end of the school year for a lot of kids. I have an 8-year-old. She finished, the last of third grade on a computer with Zoom. Now we're starting to brace for what does the following year look like. So you got a lot of parents that have had some free time to reevaluate their situation. They maybe look at the nightly news and they go, these people are lying to me about the mask. They're seeing the overt hypocrisy of, well, if you don't wear a mask and march for George Floyd, you're fine. But if you're marching for something else, then you got to wear a mask or else grandma's going to die. So people are seeing through that sort of bullshit and maybe reassessing what they want to do with their children moving forward into this next school year that starts, in a couple of months. So how... explain, like we're a bunch of morons here, explain how you get involved, how you make that first step into homeschooling, and where do you get the resources for that? Because I think a lot of parents are like, I don't know algebra. I can't be in charge of teaching my kid math because I'm not very good at math. And then it just ends right there. How do people get past that this hurdle of, I don't know everything, therefore I can't teach my kid anything, and get them more comfortable with the idea? And where do they go for resources, and where do they go for curriculums, and where do they go to connect with like-minded people? And what about soccer practice? And oh my God, all these things that seem overwhelming the first time a parent thinks about this, explain it to us in a way that doesn't sound quite so scary.
Yes. So I fully understand, mom and dads out there, this is the scariest decision of your life, I've been told. So take a deep breath. You totally got this. Homeschooling is the proven way to educate children and for them to educate themselves, moving on for thousands of years. It's forced schooling, which is the new anomaly upon history in the last 150 years in the United States. So me, I have a virtual school called Valor Academy, and I have two principles which I founded the school on. One is the world is the classroom. Number two, anything and anybody you can learn from can be a teacher. So it's really important you guys open up your mind to what is actual learning, what is an education, what do you desire for your child? And as we look at some of these questions, I find that parents just want a happy, healthy, and independent child, a child who grows up into a productive human being who has some morality. And that's basically it. They don't really care if they're a superstar athlete or some famous person or a janitor. As long as they're happy, that's what they want. So number one, learning's happening all the time. And you love your child. And you're going to be around in 5 years, in 10 years, in 50 years, let's say. These school teachers, God bless their hearts, my mother and family are them, but they're going to be gone in 9 months. Most likely, they will never see this teacher again. So you have a vested interest. You love them. Your child knows you, and you might not have to teach them algebra. You might not have to do all those things because they will learn from themselves. They can use the internet. They can use the library. So that's the first part, is you love your child. The world's a classroom. Learning's always happening. And then if they can begin to define success for themselves, they'll come to you for advice, but not for direct leadership, because you can actually allow a child to direct themselves as young as 8 and 10 and 12 years old because they're comfortable. They trust you. They trust the invites, a safe environment, right? So let me just give you some of the definitions so you know what we're working with here. So there's five phases of homeschooling that I teach my clients. Number one is the forced schooling model. Okay, that's default. It's day prison, unhelpful. Try to get your kids out as soon as possible. Number two is deschooling. You mentioned before about deprogramming. Deschooling is effectively allowing the pressure and the stress, all that fabricated emotion to release from the child. Just like when you shake up a bottle of soda, you have to open up the cap to let the pressure out. So when you pull your child to homeschool, you got to give them freedom so they can connect to themselves again, because it's a fake environment in the schools. We talked about the getting permission to go to the bathroom and get water. It's just not normal bells every 30 minutes. So the rule of thumb is for every year your child was in a compulsory learning environment, you want to give them a month of freedom. And this is very scary because they might play video games all day and all week and all month. But give them time and they will actually come down to an equilibrium where you're like, wow, that was my child, you know, before they went to school, that bright lights and the spark. They will come back, but you have to give them time. So it's for schooling, deschooling. The next one is school at home. And this is what gets conflated with homeschooling. School at home is when the parents remove the child from the school system. Great job. But then they come home and they get the curriculum and say, okay, it's math time, it's 10 a.m., it's language time, 2 p.m., it's science time, it's, you know, 6 p.m. Now you basically have school at home. Mm-hmm. The next phase is homeschooling. And this is why I recommend you start immediately if you can. You got to go through the deschooling phase. But homeschooling is defined by me, the saying, it's when a leader creates an atmosphere where personalized learning can occur. So what type of atmosphere should you, the leader, create? A safe environment, a relaxed environment, informal, low stress, low judgment, so they feel good in exploring and doing different things. And then the personalized part of it is that this quote from Gatto, when he said, your education should be as unique as your fingerprints. So if you're one among 7 billion people on the earth, your education should be just as unique. And it's your child's responsibility to find out who they are, what they enjoy, what they want to spend their life doing, what mission they're going to give themselves. And it's up to you to create that environment where they feel safe to explore these weird things. And this is a side note. Actually, I'll tell let me finish up here and I'll tell you about the food eating champion and what he said. So that's the first four stages. There's a fifth stage called unschooling. I define it as 100% self-directed learning. And this is what you do, Charlie. It's what I do. This is what many of your audience members are doing. We're not listening and learning to the show or other shows for grades or for some other person. We're doing it out of self-direction. We want to learn this stuff. And it can go for money and business and relationships and health. All those great things we learn to the benefits us. So children have that naturally. So ideally, your child, if they're, let's say, under 5 years old, they're already self-directed. So you want to just get out of the way and just allow them to keep self-directing. Of course, they'll fall and stumble and make mistakes. But again, we have to redefine mistakes. Mistakes aren't bad. Failure isn't bad. Those are teachers. And if you fall and scrape your head like I did when I was 3, you learn. Or you break your ankle or arm or whatever happens. You lose your bike in the lake. Wow, that was not fun. I don't want to do that again. So that's a lesson. Mistakes are actually very educational. So those are the five stages I kind of guide my clients through. And then the food eating champion, I just saw this 2 days ago. He is a world famous food eater. He's a Japanese guy. I think it's Kobayashi. Yeah. Anyways, they were interviewing him and he said, so tell me about your upbringing. He said, I failed at tests. I failed at school. I didn't do my homework. But my father said, son, whatever you do, just become the best. And the kid said, when his father told him that, he cried because he said, my father loves me and, you know, he's interested in food and these kind of things. And he became a food champion, very successful guy. And then they interview the father and the father said the same thing. He said, I told my son, don't worry about anything. Just whatever you do, whatever you love, just try to become the best. And that's one of the best pieces of wisdom that I've heard from a parent, but it's actually what a lot of parents tell their kids. You know, if you want to become a janitor, become the best janitor you can, because most important is that you're happy. Maybe you find value in cleaning buildings, or maybe you find value in eating 50 hot dogs in 7 minutes. You know, that's not something that I find interesting, but that's something that you, my son, my daughter are interested in. So you want to do that. And that is actually a success principle. Whatever career you get into, try to become your best. And you can start comparing yourself to other people and get distracted. But if you do your best, then there's nothing else you can require of yourself. So those are some of the phases. And I think if you understand that homeschooling has been around for a long time, forever, effectively, and that forced schooling is really harmful to children, what I tell clients is that even if you completely fail as a homeschooler, I believe you're going to be much better off than if they're very successful in the government schools. And that's just because I believe each child wants to become their fully expressed potential of who they are as a human. And, you know, like the government school teaches us to be obedient and to lose our voice. And this is just in the last 5 years or so I've been involved with the Narcopoco. Each month, each year, I become more connected with myself and more courageous to speak my truth, because it was always there, but it was buried in my heart, buried in my soul. And it's scary because you lose relationships, you know, you upset family members. But at the end of the day, we got one person to satisfy and fulfill, and that's the woman and the man in the mirror. So I started to get connected with that guy and started pursuing happiness for him and serving other people, living a moral life as best as I can. And so if parents can get that idea that love is really the lesson, and that the world is the classroom, and you're going to be around, you want to have a happy life with them, the teachers aren't going to be around. It's really up to you guys to make that big leap. And then the good news is, after about 2 years, you got it. It's very easy. I would say the first 6 months are kind of difficult. The first 3 months are kind of difficult, but you're basically just going through your own programming of what an education is. And how I define education is what you do to yourself to create a good life. And this is the higher question of, what is a good life? Well, that's the question you got to ask for yourself, as I do, as humans do. You know, maybe you don't want to live a good life. Maybe you want to, you know, do something else. But so that's how I define education. And schooling is what somebody else does to you for their benefit. And that's the state, which is an organized criminal entity based on coercion, theft, and intimidation. And my assumption is that probably your listeners aren't these people. You know, this is a small group of people who've been indoctrinated with the status belief. And as you had to unlearn, I've had to unlearn, and we step into a voluntary mindset, a consensual mindset, there's so much hope, there's so much joy in being free and pursuing interests that fulfill your own heart.
Yeah. And there's a stigma or an assumption that a lot of parents make, or a lot of kids make too, about other kids that are homeschooled, that they're socially retarded, or that they're weird, or that they're some, you know, ooh, that's those people, you know, they're homeschooled. Well, my business partner is a guy who was homeschooled, and got him ready for, you know, that he wound up going to college, getting a degree, but he'd lost that sense of that social isolation that potentially he could have had through homeschooling, by getting involved in extracurricular activities or sports and stuff like that. So they're, you know, I think that some people think, oh, I don't want to homeschool my kid because I don't want him to be a weirdo. Well, okay, but frankly, they could be a weirdo if they went to traditional public school anyway. But this homeschooling stigma of how, because there's a lack of social interaction, therefore that should be a red flag to not, you know, not push through. I just haven't really, I mean, I've heard that, but I just have never really witnessed it. The people that I meet that were homeschooled, frankly, they seem a little bit more well-adjusted than the rest of us, to be honest. There's something about that. But, you know, there's been a push and an interest, a growing interest in homeschooling, as we start to see things like, you know, classroom statistics for the United States dropping like crazy as they're rising in other parts of the world. School, you know, the school shooting things, the bullying, the school teachers being underpaid and checked out, and schools themselves dilapidated and falling down. So there's been sort of a progression away from loving these schools and getting towards more of like an independent form of learning. But I feel like there is going to be a tidal wave of people that start to think about homeschooling for the first time ever once they make and we think they're going this direction, once they start to make vaccines mandatory for kids to go to school. Now, SB 277 in California passed a couple years ago. I was living in California. We had a very young daughter. We said, bye-bye, we're out of here, moved away. But with an understanding that we can run, but we can't hide, because that is going to, of course, be implemented all over the place. Now, this coronavirus situation, and we don't need to get into the details of why you would create a vaccine for a disease that has a 99.74% survival rate, but that is, or the fact that, you know, they've had flu shots around for many, many years, and they're what, 7-8% effective. So, I mean, come on, we're not solving any problems by doing the, you know, making vaccines mandatory. But regardless, we all know that's here we are talking about logic and common sense. That'll get thrown right out the window. They'll just make it fully mandatory that you do this. And this might be the one thing that pushes a lot of parents that where they say, okay, I'm done. I'm not participating in this. You want to put an experimental vaccine in my beautiful child that isn't sick, and the median day average age of death is 80. You know, it doesn't add up. I'm not doing it. Then those people are going to try to decide, where are we going? How are we going to get into this? So I feel like what you're doing, you know, through Valor and through your, all the projects that you've got going on, this Gotto, I mean, you might wind up timing this just about perfectly, because you're going to be on the forefront of pushing this new way of looking at education. At the same time, a lot of people just decide, I'm checking out, I'm not doing this anymore. So what do you think? Do you think that this is the direction we're heading in with the vaccines?
Yeah, I think one of the silver linings, Charlie, is that's pushing a lot of families to homeschool. So I do think the forced vaccine is coming. I think I've seen some schools already enforcing social distancing, mask type preparations and warnings. You know, you have to stay 6 feet away. I think I saw a picture from the Thailand school. They literally had the little hats on with the little.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah. And it's just like, this is psychological programming, and it's unacceptable. So I think there is some silver lining there. And yeah, it's going to be helpful for me. I really have to step my game up to be able to provide service and value for these people out there. But with 50 million children out there, there's going to be a lot of people that are stuck and, you know, cannot find the courage to remove their child from the school system. So I think homeschool co-ops are going to become very interesting. I think hopefully the libraries are open. I haven't really looked here in San Jose if they're open yet, but maybe you got to start developing a private library, you know, and collecting books for, you know, private purposes. But it's really going to take mom and dad to awaken to their greatness, to their potential, and the ability of their child. You know, this is a very important person in your life, as you know, but you have 18 or 20 years, and then they grow wings and they leave. So if you do have to downsize your house, you do have to move, like you, I think that's a really good move. It might be uncomfortable, it might be scary, but what are you going to do when someone's going to inject chemicals into your child when they mandate your child be there? It's like they mandate them to be there. They're going to inject the chemicals in the child that is ineffective. I've not seen any evidence of a global pandemic. I've looked in the hospitals. I have friends who work in hospitals, directors, and they don't see anything. And they're actually telling me some really nefarious things for the money, $13,000 these hospitals are getting with the ventilators as well. So it's really good that the parents are going to homeschool, but I feel bad for the parents who are going to be afraid of maybe social peer pressure or whatever programming that they have. Again, talking about, well, I'm not a good teacher. Well, we just expressed some of the solutions for that, but it really has to go with what is more important, my own comfort as a parent or the mind and the health of my child's education or their heart or their own self-esteem. Like all these things add up to affecting the child. And if mom and dad can get together with other neighbors, and this is where it gets really hopeful, is it doesn't take 50 people. It takes maybe you and two or three of your friends, you know, parents out there, you get together, go have a barbecue. You know, we've been having barbecues on the beaches and gatherings, because first we have to talk about it. You know, before we find a solution, we got to find other people who are aligned with what we're talking about and say, yeah, I'm concerned about social distancing at schools. I'm concerned about the vaccines. Yeah. Okay. Now, what can we do? Well, it's been going on for thousands of years, so you can definitely do it. You just got to work out a schedule, work out some of the curriculums, and even the word curriculum. I mean, I'm kind of on a mission to kind of redefine these things because the current definitions are not helpful and they scare parents, and they think a curriculum is something you buy from the store and then you go take home and your child has to memorize it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that's fallen into step three. That's school at home. Curriculum, the core of curriculum means a path or a course. So if your child is unique among 7 billion children, people on the planet, then it's up to them to chart their own path, to make their own course. You're there for 18, 20 years, really helping them with shelter, food, and support, but at some point they're going to leave and now it's up to them. So you want to give them some muscles. And this is why we focus on self-expression. So public speaking, writing, these are really important things that, you know, if your child finds some interest in dinosaurs, then have them tell you about dinosaurs. So I have 20 curriculums I've created in my free homeschool group. For now it's free. It's called Homeschool Leader on Facebook. And one of them is called the presentation curriculum. And that's a curriculum when your child comes up to you and their eyes are as big as baseballs and they're like, I want to tell you about this, but maybe you're cooking, maybe you're watching a movie, you're reading, you're in deep conversation, but you see that fire, you see that light inside of them, turn to them for 2 minutes and say, yes, tell me all about dinosaurs. And you let them just flow the dinosaurs they're learning at the television or whatever. And they say, wow, that's very interesting. That's really, I'm so glad you told me that. I got to get back to work here. I got to get back to cooking, but let's talk more about that. So you want to provide that space where when they want to come talk to dad or mom, they know mom and dad care about me. I can tell them about this. No, the worms or the flowers or the hammers or whatever this, you know, adults find, you know, these things to be boring, but children, it's like, wow, the bullfrogs or something, the fish, right. And they just love it. So if they can get comfortable speaking to you and other adults, they're now developing the most valuable skill in the world, as you know, is public speaking. The average person would rather die then speak in public. And this is, you know, confirmed by various studies and surveys. So if they can learn to speak in public, they're going to become the top 10% in their field by default, you know? So speaking, communicating, having basic manners, these are some of the real curriculums that are in that group. But you just want to have a good idea of, you have to redefine these things. You know, what is success? One of the best definitions of success I got from John Wooden, the coach at UCLA, the great, you know, the legend, he said success is peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction, knowing you made the effort to become your best. Mm. And here we are talking about becoming the best again, and he calls it peace of mind. So if that's the definition of success, which I think is really powerful, also you have Earl Nightingale. He said success is progress towards a worthy goal. So what's a worthy goal? Well, your child, they're smart. Maybe they should set their own goals and then they make progress towards it. And then that's success. That's happiness. And as many of your listeners know, we change careers multiple times as adults. So we can change the goal, but success is moving towards that. It's not winning the lottery. It's not having a $10 million. That's a good financial thing to have. But we want to be fulfilled. We want to wake up excited. We want to go to bed eager for tomorrow. We want to have love. We want to have health. These are some of the things that schools don't teach us because that's not what they want us to be. They want us to be those cogs, give us the vaccines, give us the chip, give us whatever monitoring and whatever thing. Just let me go to the bathroom or let me have some free food when I really desire a free world, you know, for my kids and grandkids. And I call it intergenerational freedom. And I gave a speech recently I need to upload, but that's what it's called. And we really have to be sincere in helping the children realize that you own yourself and you can do whatever you want as long as you don't harm another person or their property. There are consequences for your actions, but it's better you learn that while you're living under our roof rather than go out in the real world and, you know, go harm somebody and then get hurt because you didn't know that the real world's different than the school world. So those are some of the some ideas of curriculums and for a new mindset for mom and dad. I know you're afraid. I know we talk about the socialization aspect. Schools, you have to actually get permission to talk. You say, hey, Johnny, you can't talk to your neighbor because they call that cheating. But in the business world and in the free world, that's called collaborating. That's trying to find a win-win relationship. And that really is the future. You know, the independent business owners doing gigs, having solopreneur or entrepreneur type ventures to make a living for yourself. And this is why I love Gatto. He said, you either write your own script in life or you become an unwitting actor in the script of someone else's. Mm. So if your child can learn that at a young age and begin to see the arc of a life, like we're born, we're kids, we're teenagers, we're adults, and then old people, and then we're in the grave. This is a cycle of life that we're all on. And I thought I was going to live forever until I was like 23 or 24. And I said, wow, I'm getting old. This is strange. I never thought I would. It's because they don't talk about these things in the schools, but at home, you can talk about it. You can go to funerals of family members, walk through the cemetery. Death doesn't have to be a scary thing. Put the spiritual beliefs aside and just say, this is just a matter of life and death, you know? So we all are going to be 6 feet under in 100 years, and let's hope we can make a difference with our life, but it doesn't have to be scary. It can be a learning tool. And there's so many curriculums that are available. And I hope that parents look at it as a course and a path rather than a document you download and have your child memorize and regurgitate.
Yeah. And I put a quote in the Octopus book from Terrence McKenna that was very similar to that. It says, if you don't have a plan, then you become part of somebody else's plan. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting. So for one last thing for the parents, though, I think that there might be some underlying fear that, let's say I homeschool, unschool my kid all the way through high school. How do the colleges perceive homeschooled students in the application and admission process to universities? Do they see that as a negative, as a positive, as a undetermined? I mean, and I know that's, I'm asking you to be, in general, speak for all colleges and universities, which I know is crazy, but still, like, do they have some sort of, what is their default thoughts on homeschooling kids?
Well, recently, and it's been known for about 20 years, but recently they've actually come out and publicly said they prefer and like homeschoolers. And the reason is that if you accept a homeschooler to your school, they want to be there. You know, many freshmen in college, they're there because mom and dad tell them to be there, and then they don't finish. Mm-hmm. So they really like homeschoolers, number one, because many of them are younger. So they might come in age 14, age 16, eager to study and learn. And then most likely they're going to finish that course of curriculum. And a lot of times, because they still have the love of learning and they want to make the world a better place, these homeschoolers become famous scientists. And one of them is called Francis Collins. And he's in the National Health Institute now, but he did some great things with the Human Genome Project. He was a homeschooler. So, I mean, there's many homeschoolers out there. So they like homeschoolers because the colleges are a business, and would you rather have 1 year of tuition or 4 years of tuition? You know, like, there's a business side, there's a commitment side, and then there's an achievement side. So if you are the admissions director at these colleges and you see, say, someone who's, let's say, 18, typical, you know, high school graduate versus someone who's 15, homeschooled, and let's say they both say our declared major is architecture. Mm-hmm. And what did the 18-year-old do? They just wrote that on a piece of paper. But what did the homeschooler do? Well, so also what I help parents do is kind of make a portfolio of success and help them go volunteer for architects, make relationships with architects, try to create apprenticeship with architects. That way, when you submit the application, they look at it and say, wow, this 15-year-old doesn't just want to be an architect. He's volunteered with this guy and made a little house with this guy, he's actually doing it. So again, the probability of success at that individual is very high. And then here's kind of the kicker is that, let's say this 15-year-old gets accepted, they become an architect, and they graduate at age 19 or 20. They go off and they do great things in the architecture world. They're going to be asked, wow, did you go to college? Yes, I went to ABC University. Wow, that's a great architectural university. But in reality, it was mom and dad, you visionary parents out there who saw their interest in architecture at age 10 and slowly kind of facilitated and guided and helped them find these architects. And then they got to volunteer one day or 1 week or something. And so it was mom and dad who made the foundation of success, but the universities get to take the credit on paper. So they like that, you know, and also if they become really wealthy, it's possible these homeschoolers will donate, you know, some money to the school. So it's a very strategic approach. The admissions process is very scientific, I would say. They know what they're looking for. And homeschoolers do really well because they have commitment, they have determination, and a lot of times they still have that enthusiasm and that desire to learn and make the world a better place. And I think every college, university wants that in their student body.
For sure. I went to USC. They got the wrong guy in me because they treated me so poorly while I was there that when I got done, I got a phone call right after I graduated. And the guy says, I'm from the alumni department. I want to see if you're interested in contributing. And I said, you can take me off your list forever. I will never give you a penny because I was on financial aid and you made me jump through every hoop there was. And you guys were so disingenuous to me that I never forgot that. So I had a much different experience with my university. And on the flip side is I went to this little tiny boarding school for high school, loved it. Great experience. Had a very different relationship with education from that. And I, you know, mistakenly just expected that would translate at a much larger university. It was not the case. I feel like if I had to go back and look, you know, go through my schooling all over again, I would do a lot of things differently. I was in good situations, but boy, I would change some things. If for people that are watching this or listening to it and want to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to reach out to you, to connect with you, to figure out what you're doing, to get involved and be a part of the projects that you're working on?
So I'm working on the GattoProject.com website. I mentioned the Homeschool Leader Facebook group. I also have a group called Apprenticeship Creators Facebook group. And then if you want to get some consulting or talk about accelerated graduations, which I do through Valor Academy, you can just email me at info@homeschoolleader.com. Those are some of the areas that I'm working on. But I think the Gatto Project is really going to turn into something where I include the homeschooling trainings, the apprenticeship trainings, even some of the college admissions. I'm trying to make it really easy for parents to walk over the bridge, because once I discovered that it's very fearful, frightening, and scary to remove your child and take on the educational responsibilities of your child, I want to make it really digestible and easy to understand. So I think GattoProject.com will probably be up sooner than later. But those current groups I mentioned are active. Feel free to join me on Facebook. I'm on Instagram at the David James Rodriguez. And those are some of the places you can find me. Reach out and help start the conversation. You know, I think if you want to have an event locally, you know, you can inquire and I can share with you some of the ideas and fees. If you want to have me come and do a training, I've done trainings, you know, across the country. I spoke in China and various places because they're looking for some tools, not the complicated, you know, scientific jargon, but like real practical stuff. And I was raised in a small town. I have the basic, like, I want to connect with humans at the human level. So I want to make it simple. And Gatto did a great job of inspiring us all to see the school system as it is. And we can break it down so they can, you know, have courage to remove their child and have some tools so they can facilitate that environment and empower them to become a self-directed learner.
Well, John Taylor Gatto did a great job of waking me up to the reality of this school system, and I am I'm really glad to connect with you because you're taking his work and moving it to the next step. And I mean, a case can be made that we have never been in need of this more than we are right now at this time. David Rodriguez, you're the best. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, Charlie. Thanks for your good work, man. Keep up the great podcast. I can't wait to see about your future success, maybe see you at a NarcoPoke or other freedom events in the future. I think we are going to build a voluntary world. It's going to be people like you and your audience. So thank you all for supporting Charlie and myself in these awesome adventures.
Thanks so much.